Good evening. Well, we have some new faces and some old familiar faces. This is wonderful tonight. Full house. Great. We haven't seen you before, have we? It's been a long time. And Maya looks like a whole new person. You're growing up. Yes. But it feels really good. And
Susie.
And Jorge's back. This is super. This is wonderful. Let's do introductions around.
Brett,
Jane,
Tom, Lynn,
Wendy,
Jorge,
Russ,
Anya,
Samia,
Susie,
Pam,
Lauren,
Ritu,
Julian.
Well, we're getting to the very end of this wonderful book. We'll have to decide what to do next pretty soon. I hope you all are thinking about that. I'm sure Dan is.
I'll write up my 10-page proposal memo.
Well,
project rolling, you know?
Yes. But we do need a new resource, so of course we have an infinite supply practically. Yeah, yeah. So our chapter tonight is called Original Buddhism. It's on page 125. And we'll read it out loud first, and then we'll talk about it a bit. Julian, you want to begin?
Sure. Original Buddhism. Actually, we are not the Soto school at all. We are just Buddhists. We are not even Zen Buddhists. If we understand this point, we are truly Buddhists. Walking, standing, sitting, and lying down are the four activities or ways of behavior in Buddhism. So Zen is not one of the four ways of behavior, according to Dogen Zenji. The Soto school is not one of the many schools of Buddhism. The Chinese Soto school may be one of the many schools of Buddhism, but according to Dogen, his way was not one of the many schools. If this is so, you may ask why we put emphasis on the sitting posture or why we put emphasis on having a teacher. The reason is because Zazen is not just one of the four ways of behavior. Zazen is a practice which contains innumerable activities. Zazen started even before Buddha and will continue forever. So this sitting posture cannot be compared to the other four activities.
Usually people put emphasis on some particular position with some particular understanding of Buddhism, and they think this is Buddhism. But we cannot compare our way with the practices people normally understand. Our teaching cannot be compared to other teachings of Buddhism. This is why we should have a teacher who does not attach to any particular understanding of Buddhism. The original teaching of Buddha includes all the various schools. As Buddhists, our traditional effort should be like Buddha's. We should not attach to any particular school or doctrine. But usually, if we have no teacher, and if we take pride in our own understanding, we'll lose the original characteristic of Buddha's teaching, which includes all the various teachings.
Because Buddha was the founder of the teaching, people tentatively called his teaching Buddhism. But actually, Buddhism is not some particular teaching. Buddhism is just truth, which includes various truths in it. Zazen practice is the practice which includes the various activities of life. So actually, we do not emphasize the sitting posture alone. How to sit is how to act. We study how to act by sitting. And this is the most basic activity for us. That is why we practice Zazen in this way. Even though we practice Zazen, we should not call ourselves the Zen school. We just practice Zazen, taking our example from Buddha. That is why we practice. Buddha taught us how to act through our practice. That is why we sit.
To do something, to live in each moment, means to be the temporal activity of Buddha. To sit in this way is to be Buddha himself, to be as the historical Buddha was. The same thing applies to everything we do. Everything is Buddha's activity. So whatever you do, or even if you keep from doing something, Buddha is in that activity. Because people have no such understanding of Buddha, they think that what they do is the most important thing, without knowing who it is that is actually doing it. People think that they are doing various things, but actually Buddha is doing everything. Every one of us has his own name, but those names are the many names of one Buddha. Each one of us has many activities, but those activities are all Buddha's activities. Without knowing this, people put emphasis on some activity. When they put emphasis on Zazen, it is not true Zazen. It looks as if they were sitting in the same way as Buddha, but there is a big difference in their understanding of our practice. They understand this sitting posture as just one of the four basic postures of man, and they think, I now take this posture. But Zazen is all the postures, and each posture is Buddha's posture. This understanding is the right understanding of Zazen posture. If you practice in this way, it is Buddha's way. This is a very, very important point.
So Dogen did not call himself a Soto teacher or a Soto disciple. He said, other people may call us the Soto school, but there is no reason for us to call ourselves Soto. You should not even use the name Soto. No school should consider itself a separate school. It should just be one tentative form of Buddhism. But as long as the various schools do not accept this kind of understanding, as long as they continue calling themselves by their particular names, you must accept the tentative name of Soto. But I want to make this point clear. Actually, we are not the Soto school at all. We are just Buddhists. We are not even Zen Buddhists. We are just Buddhists. If we understand this point, we are truly Buddhists.
Buddha's teaching is everywhere. Today it is raining. This is Buddha's teaching. People think their own way or their own religious understanding is Buddha's way. Without knowing what they are hearing or what they are doing or where they are. Religion is not any particular teaching. Religion is everywhere. We have to understand our teaching in this way. We should forget all about some particular teaching. We should not ask which is good or bad. There should not be any particular teaching. Teaching is in each moment, in every existence. That is the true teaching.
This was also Koban's understanding. Many times he had to connect with the Soto school. His relatives were very important in the Soto school. One of them was a bishop in Los Angeles. The head monks at Eheiji were kin to him. He was supposed to behave in a certain particular way and refused to do it. He was invited to join his students to the Soto school, and he refused to do it. He was once invited to L.A. to a big meeting of all the Soto people, including the bishop, of course, And it was in the middle of our sesshin. And he went down there and made an appearance and said he was very sorry, but his students were waiting for him. And he got back on the plane and came back up and sat sesshin with us. One time, three very important monks from the Soto mission, missionaries, came to visit Jikoji, and that was the middle of sesshin. So we invited them in and fed them orioki lunch, and then afterwards they sat down with Koban and me and talked about, they wanted to know how much money we had, how many students we had, what we saw as the future, especially our connection with them. And they asked Koban what they could do for us, meaning, please join us. And Koban said, Heiji Monastery puts out a very nice little magazine. If you could put us on the mailing list, we would be very grateful. That was the whole connection. And yet, in his own mind, I think in his own heart, he kept the deep connection that there was with everybody there, but refused to institutionalize our practice. It's kind of terrible fate in a way. As you can see with Jikoji, it's still not institutionalized very well, and it makes everything very wobbly. It's hard to know quite what's going to happen next always, and yet it's more like life, really. It's always been my sort of koan about how far to institutionalize anything. We need some kind of structure in order to hold the space and help each other and do what we need to do. On the other hand, as soon as we get a nice rigid structure and everybody feels completely safe, the whole thing changes into something else. The life is out of it. The truth disappears very quickly because we get caught in the thought of it rather than the experience of it. Suzuki Roshi talks about the truth. Zazen practice. Buddhism is just truth, which includes various truths in it. What is truth? Sometimes we say Dharma, or we say the teaching. Actually, the truth is just appearing all the time, all around us. The most cogent sentence in here, I think, and the one that explains it, is people think their own way or their own religious understanding is Buddha's way without knowing what they are hearing or what they are doing or where they are. It's such a peculiar aspect of human being that we can be somewhere and not know where we are. Not be there. Be a million miles away. To not really know who we are beyond our conditioning. To take ourselves for granted. Buddha was a Hindu, and like Jesus, he was a radical in that he had new ideas about his religion, but he didn't mean to be a Buddhist. And yet here we are. We just chanted the Heart Sutra. His basic message is there's no attainment. There's no place to go. And we have it already. There was a time in China when the teaching became more and more simple and the institution kind of got more and more wobbly. And the teaching became, well, everybody has Buddha nature. And so the monks decided, might as well go home and kick back and watch TV or whatever they did in the old days in China. But what brings us here to the cushion is our life itself. The life that we live in here, out there, as this mysterious being that we are. The being that we know as myself, meeting many, many other myselfs. And yet each one of us has a different view. We never know whether your friend's red is the same as your red. We call something red, but we don't know if our experiences are exactly the same. So each one is a truth in the big truth. Or we say sometimes relative and absolute. And Suzuki Roshi is pointing to the relative as the absolute, you could say. Buddha means awake or awakening. So all things are Buddha. Not just all people, but all things. The dog Buddhas, tree Buddhas, rock Buddhas. All things are living and breathing. And are being lived and breathed, which is his other point. We think we're doing it. And yet we only know in retrospect what we've done. That too is very mysterious. Who raises the eyebrows and blinks the eyes? How does that happen? All of our names are the many names of Buddha, he says. Often we feel so bad. Feel bad about ourselves, about our lives. One of the hard things about the way our mind works is that we're always measuring what we're doing. It's like our brain is full of little measuring instruments and we're always trying to figure out just where each thing that happens fits. How good is it? How bad is it? How good does it make me? How bad does it make me? Trying to work it all out and make it make some kind of sense. And often the sense, because of our conditioning, is that, oh, I'm doing not very well. It's a kind of awkward way to live when we don't know who we are and where we are. That kind of calculation is extra. we can't even measure what's happening. And if we try to measure what did happen, we've already distorted it by thinking about it. So strange. I was very relieved to read this because I had a lot of doubts about Zen. And I didn't want to join something and thought, oh, well, it's just one more thing to join. And yet it didn't seem that way, practicing at Haiku Zendo. And then when we read this, I thought, oh, yeah, we don't have to be something in particular. It's about the experience of Zazen itself when we don't have to be somebody. Actually, we don't ever have to be something in particular. We just rise to the occasion and be what that is. Koban always said Buddhism or Zazen was a foundation practice, not a religion. And I think that's what he's saying too. You can make up a religion from your experience. There are many of them. I often think about the Quakers, how very like our practice, the Quaker practice, is. Yet the culture is very different. But as I said last week, we fit in here so well. It feels so good. It's so simple, so plain. Nothing extra. So, what do you have to add? Dan?
Some chapters in this book seem to be written more directly to me than others. That's amazing how some kind of punch you in the stomach a little harder than others. This one does speak to me quite directly. The quote that you mentioned, Buddhism is just truth, capital T, which include various truths, lowercase t, in it. And I find the reason that touches me is here in the West, we think of the truth with capital the, capital truth, as being singular in the capital. And yet, he's saying not that at all. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, a very hard thing for the Western mind to think about. And I'm wondering that if we, one way I interpret these things, I kind of rewrite them in my head. So instead of saying those words, it's like I would rewrite it as everyone's life is just this moment, which includes every other moment and every moment to be, and especially this moment. It's unfolding, and that is the truth. And if you try to describe it as singular, you're missing the fact that it's changing now, and now.
That it's a dynamic, yes. Well, they talk about two truths. You know, the truth of the absolute and the relative. And the relative is just the way that we, with our own minds, chop up everything so that we have a different name for things. You know, we say, well, this is a finger and this is a hand, but it's actually all one thing. This is a floor and that's a ceiling, but it's actually all one thing. And you can go all the way through the universe and see that we're just naming everything and chopping it up. And so we begin to think that this is a separate thing. You know, as if you could just break it off and it would be not connected to anything else. Everything is connected. And that's what absolute means, or truth means. And yet we see it and experience it as bits and pieces. which is what makes life so interesting and so dynamic, because it's all active.
But don't a lot of people argue in the relative description you just gave about what the truth is, because they want to convince you of their relative truth?
Oh, yes. Sure.
And sometimes that can be extremely, people can be extremely determined to make sure that you see the world their way. And I phrase it exactly that way. It isn't, from our practice, we know that it is the one, it is the naming going on. But they want to convince you that their viewpoint of that is definitively the right one.
Because it makes them feel so secure. That's why we attach ourselves so tightly to, I mean, people get attached to Zen too and hold on tight and try to persuade people, oh, you should try to sit, you must try it. Because we feel more secure. And actually life is pretty insecure. So committing to Zen, or the Zen life, is really committing to being open to the insecurity of our lives. Accepting it and enjoying it, even though we don't quite know what we're doing or where we're going. And I think when people are, insisting themselves that it's well just to, that's Buddha too. Buddha with an opinion. Julian?
What about people who relish, seem to, in an almost malicious way, the impermanence of things? Always kind of liking to take the rug out under people's feet. I mean, is that...
Sounds like a Zen master.
Wow.
You can shake... You've got a good teacher there.
Okay.
You're on fuego tonight, Andrew.
Yes.
So, how are you talking about this relative idea, this comparing, and how we look at things to try to figure out where we are by comparing to other things? That's kind of how society is built, it seems.
Yes.
Systems are built, and it's all based on something else. It's not. There are very few things that are, that kind of relish the not knowing, the insecurity.
Yeah.
And I think that we can live that way, but it is challenging, because then you. It's interesting, I guess, because in a profession or in a, you have something you can do or live with other people who are living in those comparisons, and then you're not comparing. It makes them feel insecure, but really your job is to make them secure because you're offering them something.
Well, it's about relationship and trust. And so, and it's about enjoying other people and being willing to be surprised. So it means working along with people and understanding where they're coming from, understanding how they see things. So it's not like we go in and sort of try to change people's minds, but just to be really right there with them, where they are, and be creative. There's so much room for creativity in every one of our situations if we don't buy into the way that it's supposed to be and just open up to the way it is and surprise people and surprise yourself. You never know what's going to come out. Maya?
Well, in the book it said that Buddha's way was walk, run, sit, and lie down. Well, whose way was it before Buddha's? Or was Buddha the first person on earth, or something like that?
He said in here that Buddha was... it happened long, long before Buddha. So Buddha was just one person. But he was the one that we know about because it happened within our time. Even though it was long, long ago, it was still our time when he was born. But we always say there were seven Buddhas before Buddha, which means that goes back, 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 back. Maybe to the Big Bang at the beginning of the universe. There must have been a Buddha way back there, too.
And is there a Buddha now?
Yep.
Okay.
It's a good question, Maya. That's a good question. Thank you. It's 8 o'clock.